Hello. Welcome to Prog Lang Cast. This is our first vodcast. Is that what you called it? Vodcast?
That's what I called it. Vodcast.
Vodcast. Vodcast slash podcast. When it's audio, it'll just be a podcast. And it is a podcast for Prog Lang Base, which is a website that we're building to be an amazing resource for programming languages. And we're just going to begin having a chat here. This is very unpolished. We're just getting the ball rolling. And so we're going to talk about a little bit about what Prog Lang Base is, and also this project that we're calling, is it a project? Goodbye, Hello World. Is that a project?
Or today's name project is Goodbye, Hello World.
Goodbye, Hello World. Okay. Do you have anything you want to add there about this?
Well, just what is our premise for today? Why is it we're looking at this? Why are we calling it Goodbye, Hello World? Hello World is a program that is basically the first example for all programming languages that you try to start learning. They'll show you, this is how you print Hello World. So what's our premise today?
For Hello World, or Goodbye Hello World, the premise is it's not enough, right? Every language has a print line or print something or print this or output the standard out or something. So what do you see in terms of the syntax? What do you see in terms of the semantics? What do you see in terms of the mechanics of the language from that example? Not much. So the proposition here is a little more robust, typical app that I temporarily, until we come up with a better name, Goodbye Hello World. I was thinking Goodbye World, but that seemed a little dark in it.
I actually like that one, to tell you the
goodbye
truth.
World.
But I already told you,
we could switch over to Goodbye World, but it's going to be called Goodbye Hello World. But to preface this is part of the Prog Lang Base project. It will be a website. It's not up yet, where we're building that. A resource for as many programming languages as we can figure out.
And we can write code for, yeah.
Well, we'll write code for many of the languages. That's
what I'm thinking. Yeah. Or we'll either write code or we'll find pieces of code out there. Right. I really like the idea of the comparative aspect, where I can look at one particular problem and then I can see how that's solved in different languages and talking about what are the pros and cons of those languages. So that's the attraction for me.
Exactly. So we'll go more into detail on Prog Lang Base when it's actually available and people can look at it and it'll make sense other than just wasting our time talking about it. So let's focus on Goodbye Hello World. And I'm going to do a screen share here.
Okay.
Let's do that. And we want the screen go live.
Do you want to talk a little bit about just briefly, the history of programming languages and how the invention of languages has been molded or changed over the years. Like, for instance, we were talking the other day about resources and how resources are virtually unlimited today. And that has certainly impacted how languages are developed now. We have a lot more of these multi-level languages, things working in virtual machines and stuff like that. Whereas in the past, where resources were so much more scarce and processing power was so much less, we had to be much more economical and languages would reflect that. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all, but because it seems like if we're talking about Hello World, then one of the questions I would ask is, who are our audience? Certainly not you and me. We've done programming for a few days, but there are, you know, people out there that are learning to program for the first time. Are we saying this is not for them? I think we are. I think we're saying it's not for the people that are trying to learn to program.
No. Well, for my part, I would say no. Prog Lang Base is going to be targeted for people wanting to explore a variety of programming languages. I'm not on my part. I mean, certainly you're free to take a different approach, but on my part,
I agree with you. That's why I was asking the question.
I'm thinking intermediate level, really. And it's really about exploring other languages and comparing language features, and some basic knowledge of programming should be a prerequisite to get into that. We don't need to add yet another learn how to program in X number of days, learn how to get started on this language.
Right.
There's so much of that out there. The distinguishing feature here is we want to look at the deep details, the nuances, and be able to compare all the varieties of programming languages available. And again, we'll discuss more about that. To the larger topic where you're talking about the ancestry of languages or the source of history, that's certainly an interesting topic. I think that's a large thing to b- bite off right
probably
now.
Probably not one for today. Well, the question about level of programming ability is relevant to this because for people, for the intermediate level programmer, as you put it, the Hello World example is useless.
It's insufficient.
It doesn't tell him anything.
It's wholly insufficient. So let's just take a stab at this. Let me show you what I've done so far. So last week we agreed we'd start on the project and I would start first. And I pick C as the language. It just seems to be the grandfather of all modern languages right now. And the funny thing is I go out and I build implementations for all the languages that I'm exploring and trying. C seems to be the universal thing they're implemented in. So it seemed like a good starting point, simple rudimentary language. Just about every programmer around is going to be familiar with it at some level. Anyway, where we're starting. So I want to ask you, the plan is to take this example called, and here it is right here. Actually, let me just execute it. Let's just see what we got. First, we have a project. It's out on GitHub and GitLab. This is our GitLab account, which is a proglang base. And you can see we're building the website, but right now we have a GHW, which is goodbye, hello world. And there it is. It's just simply goodbye, hello world. Maybe I should make this larger here, make us smaller. There we go. People can see that a little bit better. README tells you almost nothing. It's a Mozilla public license, and the code is under C. We can envision that under code, we're going to have an example program for every language. And this is the C program, and this is the extent of it. I think for now, one page is pretty good. You know, a page, what is a page? But obviously not too long. I did add
something that we can see, we can show on one screen. That's it.
It would be good. And I'll make this a little bit bigger font. Here it is in my Vim. So yeah,
you're right about the black background. It is better for podcasts.
Yeah, and it seems like GitHub here. Maybe there's a way to change the default, but it goes into this Manila folder like color. It's probably ways to do that.
There are probably ways to change the background.
But I also wanted to show that in the directory there is a script, which is just run, and trying to keep this as minimal as possible. So I'm embracing this philosophy of strong minimalism, the least that you can do to get something done. And the idea
this is a tool that's gonna build it and then run it.
Well, yeah, I would think that in each example directory, there's some one command you should be able to execute that'll compile and run it. In this case, since C doesn't really have a packaging system and a build system, you know, without some third party like CMake or something, this is such a simple program. I wrote this. This is probably not going to execute under native Windows. This might execute under WSL. Right now I'm running on Mac here, and GCC is built into Mac. So again, not having to install anything, C is a good place to start because almost every platform has a C compiler of some kind, one way or another. Like I said, Windows, I think, is the outlier in that if you're in native mode, you have to install Microsoft's C tools. But if you go to the subsystem for Linux, which is available with an extra step to install, it does have a GCC in there, I think, depending. Well, we'll take a look at that. Anyway, under Linux, obviously GCC is here.
We'll try to provide some of these answers as we go forward.
So this is all this is a straight-up POSIX shell. It's not even Bash because Mac changed to Z shell a while ago. So it invokes GCC using the standard of C11, so not C99, but C11, and compiling one file into an executable and running it. And let's see what happens when we run it. Let's just run this. Let's just say clear. And everybody, you can see that fine. We're just going to say run.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
So what is goodbye, hello world? It says, wants a countdown. Let's do 10 seconds. How's that?
All right.
World hello, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, goodbye.
Okay.
So world hello, countdown, goodbye. So it's kind of backwards, right? It's kind of world hello, goodbye, but we're calling it goodbye, hello world. So the idea here that I came up with was, we're going to do the hello world, starting by world hello, but let me just talk about what are the most common things you're going to see in programming that you're going to need to do. Well, iteration of some kind. So we have a loop dealing with time. Time is just always a challenge one way or another. So in this case, not dealing with date times directly yet, but we are dealing with sleeps. We have a sleep down here. We have a couple of loops. Taking an argument from the command line. So it's obviously this is a command line tool. We're not doing a web-based, GUI-based version. Parsing commands, parsing strings. The optional, in fact, we can do a run and we can actually feed it the argument in the beginning and bypass the prompt.
That. So you're also talking about dealing with command line arguments.
Yeah, defaulting, not defaulting, taking input. So what is Hello World? What does Hello World stress in terms of a language? Outputting to standard out. That's it. That's all it does.
Input. Well, also you could set it up to take input from standard in if it's available.
But what I'm saying is, the typical example Hello World doesn't do that. It only does output. So the only thing you see as an example of a programming language is how to output to standard out. So I said, okay, well, we should do input as well as output. So we've got input.
That's good. Right? I guess what I'm wondering about is like if you're going to do output standard out, which of course is a standard for Hello World, and you're going to talk about parameters coming in, it might be interesting to make it possible to pipe the value in so that you could say, take input from, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's not really valuable.
Well, let's
but it will cover both sides of it.
Let me just propose the thesis that I came up with. So if you're going to do output, you should do input. We should be able to take arguments from the command line. If it's a command line utility, that's essential. You're always going to be dealing with that. Even if there's some library that does it for you automatically, something that simplifies it, it's something you have to do in your program. Taking in a number and converting it to a string, so you have the possibility of invalid numbers. For example, let's say blah, and it says, oh, look, invalid, try again. What if I say negative 50? Also says try again. So we have some error checking. In fact, one of the most critical things in any program is handling errors, handling failures, handling bad input. So that just seemed to me to be an important requirement. In fact, let's put a bad argument at the command line.
Right.
So it's able to say whether I get it from the command line, I get it from input. I'm still gonna do check for validity, and until you give me something good, like let's say 20 seconds or let's say 5 seconds, then I'm only going to work properly. So we've got input, we've got output, we've got taking arguments from the command line, we've got parsing numbers into strings. It's a countdown, so we're going to do iteration, and we're going to introduce potentially some concurrency here. And this is going to become more a challenge, especially when we talk about C. I think it's important, if we consider this the bottom tier for Goodbye Hello World. You and I talked about that a little bit. Potentially, there may be higher tiers. Maybe we do a Goodbye Hello Internet, and then we deal with network calls or JSON parsing or that sort of thing. But we're trying.
I certainly like that approach about looking at a lot of the fundamental kinds of problems that you deal with. I mean, this particular one shows you some basic work with time and iteration and data input and data output. But certainly, we want to do something with a lot of, like you were talking about concurrency, but we're not talking about concurrency here. We've just got a single thread, right? You just single threaded in here. Because I've never seen any simple program that started with multi-threading.
Well, so that's a good point. And this was kind of a rub when I came against it. One of the weaknesses of C is the lack of standardization at the language level of concurrency. Recently, there is a feature in C11 called threads.h, which is a common header that ostensibly provides an abstraction to the operating system level threading models, but it turns out that in C11, it's considered optional. And most compilers, even today, C compilers, opt not to support threads.h. So there really is no language level standardization of concurrency. And one of the things I thought was important for the Goodbye Hello World was we want the code to only use what's built into the language directly. We don't want to rely on, we're going to use, in this case, we're going to use a third-party library or
right.
we're gonna
no, I agree with that.
Right.
I agree with that.
So if the language doesn't support some feature of Goodbye Hello World, we just with that right. language we can't write that feature in, and that will in some ways be kind of a gap for well, any particular implementation.
When we're talking about C, that's virtually not the case. I mean, they're pretty much, I mean, I can't really think of anything off the top of my head that you can't do in C that you need a separate library for. But there are plenty of other languages in which that's true.
Well, to your point, threading is one of those. So if I actually include, for example, if I include threads.h, you're going to notice something funny here. So threads.h is a standard in C11. So let's go ahead and include it. What's going on with, oh, I did not open this in Vim. It's funny. I'm on a Mac and I have Xcode installed, and Xcode has kind of overtaken my use of C files. See, it goes to Xcode. I don't want to go to Xcode. I want to just go to Mac Vim. I'm going to override that here. Okay. So now all my C files should open in Vim. There we go. Okay. I was noticing the colors weren't quite my theme. I'm like, that is not my C theme, my C color theme here. I'm going to make this font bigger. There we go. How's that? Sufficiently visible? Okay. So now if I save this and I say threads.h, now threads.h is part of the C11 standard, but it is an optional feature. If I actually try to do a run here, let's see what happens. Yeah. So as it turns out, there's a macro that compiler implementers are allowed to include, and I think it's called something like standard C threads not included or something like that. Literally this is the macro. It might not be exactly that, but if a compiler implementer decides to implement that, you have to check for it, and then you're like, I'm out of luck. There is no platform, you know, abstraction for threads, and now I have to do the ifdef windows include its headers, ifdef everything else include pthreads or some POSIX header. So this is an example where even C, as one of the most fundamental languages, the minute we start talking about concurrency, we immediately run into a sandbar. Because it's going, look, I don't have, at the language level, C doesn't have a standard for concurrency. We've tried to do this threads.h, but we've made it optional for implementers to decide they don't want to support that. So if a programmer wants to write, you know, truly platform, language neutral, language built-in code for concurrency, well, go somewhere else. Go to one of the other languages that are going to provide that. So in this case, however, I do want to say that I did find that NanoSleep inside of Time is considered standard. And NanoSleep should be a true sleep function. In other words, this process, at least, you're right that this program is single-threaded, but the CPU should actually be going into a wait mode for some period of time. It shouldn't be spinning. We shouldn't see the CPU spinning here.
No, you're right. It's not spinning.
I'm not doing a hard loop. So
I don't think that, I mean, that's pretty much how all sleep functions that I'm familiar with today, that's how they work. They go into they go into a halt state and they wait until something elapses. They just simply wake up at a certain time, which is typically a function within the operating system.
Yeah, and I could bring up the activity monitor and show that when this program is doing its countdown, it's not sitting there, you know, hammering on the CPU while it's waiting each second to sleep. And then also I'm trusting that this, you know, giving it 1 second between, that it's honoring that. You know, it's truly a second. But that depends on the implementation.
Well, is NanoSleep something that's relatively new?
It is standard in the time.h header for C11. Now, one of the things I did read online was that if you do not put in, whoops, where are we? Oh, it's just run. So cat run. I'm just going to look at run. If you do not say GNU 11, that you're not likely to get NanoSleep as part of the time header. But okay. As long as the compiler is fed this standard, in this case, since we're using GCC. Anyway, I don't mean to get into too much detail here, but I did.
We're getting a little off the topic here.
That might be
another session altogether to talk about concurrency, which I think is a really good idea. Right. But right now we're getting a little off the topic of showing a reasonable amount of code in a particular language to give a fair idea of how it works, which is something that Hello World doesn't do. The typical Hello World doesn't do.
Let's just stash that. And so what do you think? Do you think this is a good starting point for Goodbye Hello World? Is it doing enough? Is it doing too much? Is this too much from Hello World? Well, that's our goal, right? What do we think?
You're certainly covering more than I would have thought we were going to cover, but it's probably a reasonable start. Like, for instance, when you're looking at the input, right, you're going out and doing the fgets, which is pulling the input from the command line. From the input, right? And the input you're taking from the command line, or you're taking it from...
I was trying to zoom in on your face, but something happened here to Discord. Actually, I'm going to stop. There we go. Okay.
It's a known problem. I've now lost your screen.
Yeah. I stopped sharing the screen because you're talking, and I wanted the audience to see your beautiful face while you're talking.
Thank you. I was just looking at the code, and I was looking at how you're processing the input, going through the fgets and then checking to make sure that there are numbers, checking to see if you've got a line feed, that kind of thing. So that's a little bit more, but we are showing some important features of string manipulation. When we get into comparison, even in using the CLEXR, which you noted earlier, that so many languages are using the CLEXR, one of the things that really occurred to me was strtol, which converts a string to a long, is not standard for some of these other CLEXR-based languages that use like a virtual machine, like, for instance, C Sharp or Java. These use a kind of a more expanded syntax. In C Sharp, I believe it's I think it's long from string or string to string dot from too long or something like that. They're a little bit more expansive. We're using C here, and that's illustrating a much more abbreviated kind of syntax, which is standard for the CLEXR. But so many languages out there which are based on the CLEXR are kind of using different an expanded set of keywords.
Right.
That was one of the things that I noticed. Printf, which is, I've always found this interesting in working with C, is that the printf, which has been in C from the inception of C, and it is only now the last 10 years becoming generally more standardized in terms of providing that kind of capability. And it's been a great way to format strings forever, right from the beginning, with printf and sprintf. Those are some of the other things. I think the kind of point that I'm making is some of the stuff that we're looking at is going to be unique to the C or C++ languages. Whereas when you get further into languages that are using the CLEXR, which is, what would you say is something that predominantly defines the CLEXR? The use of braces, the operators, right? The incrementers and decrementers would be another one. The style of the for loops, which
You're talking about the syntax?
Yeah. What identifies the CLEXR? And that's what I would say. I'd say primarily for me, it's the use of the braces and the use of the increment and decrement operators. The parentheticals, the semicolons.
Well, I mean, if we're going to analyze, do we want to do a deep analysis of C? I think but let's save what you're saying and save what your thoughts are, because one of the plans that I'd like to execute going forward in the upcoming podcasts is to dedicate episodes to languages. So we will do a C episode. And we can discuss all of our thoughts about that. So the things you're saying are a good starting point for that. So we dive into it.
Okay.
The question here that I have is this a good spec? Is this a good spec for this? And do we feel like reasonably good that every language we're gonna throw this at is gonna be capable of doing essentially this set of requirements.
Okay, so
can we rewrite this in every language? Yeah, can we rewrite this in every language?
Okay, yeah, I think it's a good place to start.
I mean, because that's the proposition of Hello World, right? Hello World is no matter what programming language gets created for someone to learn, there's got to be a way to do Hello World. Well, we're kind of making a new proposition. We're saying for whatever language somebody's going to program in, it should be at least capable of doing these things. If it cannot do these things, then it's probably pretty insufficient for most programming tasks.
Generally speaking, yes, I'd have to say that.
Right. I mean, we can use words like Turing complete and lambda calculus and all the things that are used to measure the capabilities of languages. But this is concrete, right? This is like Hello World. It's concrete, but it's going to impose a more reasonable or a greater set of demands upon the language than Hello World. A large class of problems could be solved with this capability.
One thing it does add over the traditional Hello World is where Hello World says, okay, here's how you print a simple string to output,
right?
Which is virtually useless as a program, right? So this one covers how do I write a console application that takes a piece of input, does a small function, and then generates an output. So from that point of view, it's a much better starting place than the typical Hello World.
And there's no reason why we need to be locked into this spec. So this is a prototype. Right. As we go forward, I think we will polish essentially the spec for Goodbye Hello World as we jump from language to language. So the next question...
Well, I think, like I said... Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, like I said to you the other day, the next... Because I think what we talked about is we'll start with this and we'll start writing this particular piece in other languages.
Right.
To demonstrate how they do it well or do it differently. And I was saying the other day that I would pick PHP first.
Okay.
Mostly because I'm not a fan of PHP. So I want to try eating my vegetables first before I get into something that I like.
Little masochism for you. Well,
exactly.
That begs a question that came into my mind. So ostensibly a plan going forward is each week, each of us is going to write Goodbye Hello World in a different language. And I thought there was a couple approaches. Now you've already laid claim to you're going to do PHP for next week. I started with C, so I'm going to pick a language, or we pick the language for the other person.
Okay, I'm down with that too. If you want to pick a language for me,
once we have the programming base website up, one of the features that I'd like to implement is a randomization of the languages as they're presented, to avoid kind of alphabetical bias or other forms of bias. Like when somebody first comes to the site, the sort order is just going to be randomized. It's going to be randomized. But I was thinking we could use that as a mechanism for each subsequent week. We kind of like, it's like Wheel of Fortune some type thing where we spin the spinner and it's like, this is what you're going to get next week. Or we do the thing where we subject the other person. I tell you what you have to do it in and you tell me what I have to do it in. And just hope that we're not being overly vicious to each other, making a great challenge. But I'm gonna give it to you. We don't have the random spinner at this point. So you're going to pick PHP for yourself, which is fine since I picked C last week. So you pick for me what language I have to code this in. And if I don't have the implementation, that'll be a challenge for me to build the implementation or get it in some way and do it. But
APL.
APL. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Blast from the past.
It is the very first language I learned when I was 8 years old. It was APL.
Yeah.
And I have barely touched it since. I've actually taken a strong interest in array languages lately. I've been following the ArrayCast.
Yeah. I know. That's why I'm interested in that. And, I mean, I could say, I mean, I thought about saying Scheme, but I know you're in love with Scheme right now.
I think we both have to eat our vegetables. I don't know if I'm in love with it, but APL. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
It's like back
your
to my
challenge.
Back to my childhood.
Your challenge is going to be a little harder than mine, I think. I think I'm PHP, I'm going to be able to do reasonably quickly.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be able to do it in a lot fewer characters. I don't have to worry about it being a page. It's literally going to be probably one line.
That's true.
Or two at the most, which is one of the benefits.
Okay. Remember, you got to take input and countdown and output. I mean, I remember APL. You're going to struggle with doing that in one line, but we'll see.
I don't know. Yeah, great. So next week is going to be PHP for you, APL for me. The same program with the same requirements. Goodbye, hello world. And you'll add it to the repo, and I'll add it to the repo. And then people will be able to play with it.
Okay.
So PHP, so let's talk about that for a second. APL implementations, there are some open source implementations that I can build. So one of the challenges we're going to have is for every language that we write this in, for other people to be able to try it out. Well, I'm not planning on building an exorcism site at this point, like a website that automatically lets you do it. But somebody would have to have an implementation available. So definitely we should try to, you know, write in an implementation that someone else could easily obtain, right? Open source, yes. Build it themselves, download it, install it via, you know, whatever package managers they might use. What are you going to use? What do you use for PHP?
I don't know yet. I mean, I'm probably going to do this in CentOS Linux.
Okay. Wow.
Or I might try doing it in WSL, because I haven't tried WSL yet. That's a basic part of Windows 10 or Windows 11.
It's available in both, and actually it was available. Was it available prior to 10? I use WSL 1 on Windows. I haven't switched to 2. And there is a step you have to do a special step to install it, but it's built in a sense. I think it will download.
I'll figure it out. I haven't done it yet. You know, up until now, I mean, I don't even actually have to do that, because I've been using MSys for quite a while.
Oh yeah.
So I've got GCC available. Well, that's not going to help me for PHP, obviously. But PHP isn't native though.
Well, that was my question. What implementation are you going to use for PHP?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to decide.
Well, I mean, you picked PHP. Can you write PHP code right now? Do you have some environment you can code it in?
No.
Oh, okay. I mean, so you are making it hard on yourself.
Well, no, I have.
Great. That's great.
The server that I had the PHP implementation on is down now. That it crashed on us.
Oh, you had it running on a server, on a Linux server?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I had a website running in PHP, AngularJS, and Laravel, which is a PHP framework.
Right, right. Yeah, very popular actually to this day. In fact, I've been watching some videos lately where the guys are recommending, you know, learn Laravel. You don't focus so much on the language and focus more on this framework because it's awesome, sort of thing. I have to be honest, I don't know that I've even ever looked at PHP. I've probably glanced at it, but I wouldn't recognize the syntax if I looked at it. So this will be fun. This will be an education for me.
Oh, yeah, you would. You'd recognize the syntax. PHP? It's a bastardized CLEXer.
Okay, well.
I mean.
Not sure what that
means. Look, like I said, I'm picking it because I'm not a fan.
Okay.
And I want to. The one thing, because when I first started working with PHP, I didn't want to work with Laravel. Unfortunately, the choice wasn't up to me. I wanted to work with something called Falcon. Because of what I was reading, what they had done is they had written the most of the PHP basic functions in a native environment. So you were getting really, really great performance out of them. And but Laravel is was pretty much the framework du jour for PHP, is what everybody's using.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's still a pretty strong player in the web world at this point.
Yeah, it's number one for sure.
It's number
one. I mean, PHP
is. When you say number one, what are you saying? Like there are more websites deployed on Laravel?
I believe there. At least when the last time I looked at it, it was the most prevalent out there.
Let's see.
Top 10 best PHP frameworks for web development. Number one is Laravel.
Oh, for PHP frameworks. I thought you meant frameworks in general. I was thinking it beats out Rails. No. It beats out Django.
No.
It beats out Node and Node frameworks or whatever, you know, Angular, whatever people are running on the back end. Okay, interesting, cool. Well, I appreciate you not putting me through such pain. I like APL. See, I don't dislike the language, so.
I know.
But I've been fondly looking at BQN, which is a newer version of that, also with hieroglyphics. I like the hieroglyphics.
I'll confess, the reason I chose APL is because I want to see some of your APL code. I mean, you know, neither of us have seen working APL code in a long, long time.
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen it, and I've played around with it a little bit. But this program, writing a full blown program that does all of these things will be fun. And
I years ago, I wrote a full running database management or database management system in APL.
You did.
And this was at the Aerospace Corporation years ago. I called it DIPS, Data Inquiry Processing System.
Wow. What was that? So I was that like on a, what was that on? 5110 or 5120 or something?
No. This was on the old, I'm really going to date us here. This is on the
you
old
date yourself. CDC. You're not dating me.
Yeah. CDC? Yeah, I am. Remember the CDC, the Cyber 176,
no.
That minute mainframe computer, that's what they had over at, over the Aerospace Corporation.
No, I never worked on
CDC doesn't exist anymore. So.
Yeah. Never worked on any of those machines. All right. So we have
Feel free to edit all of this part out.
I'm not editing anything. I'm just editing my own. I'm editing my own tongue while I talk.
Okay.
So, good. So I do APL, you do PHP, same spec,
all right.
Doing the same thing, should work the same. We'll put it in the directory.
Right. And well, I'll have all the answers for you. Like, you know, I'll pick something, I'll do it in it. You do the same thing. And then we'll talk about the implementations that we're picking.
Yeah. I think that's, as I think about it, that's going to be one of the challenges. So lately, over the last few years, I've been doing a lot of programming language research into a variety of programming languages. Hence the genesis of Proglang Base is really going to be a website built out of literal spreadsheets of research that I've been doing and breaking down all the features of languages and their paradigms and their capabilities. And as part of that, I've obviously needed implementations to do my own coding in these languages. And I've taken the path of, I want to build everything from source, ideally. I used to use Gentoo years ago, which I actually built from source as my operating system and pretty much built most of the tools that I was using from source. So in part of embracing languages going forward, that's kind of been my philosophy. So I ideally want to build it from source. Now, obviously, GCC comes with this bundled inside Mac OS. So in this case, I cheated a little bit. I didn't build the compiler. So there is some point at which you need to bootstrap. That's why picking C seemed like a good language, because it's one of the most bootstrappable languages out there. But for APL, I'll have to find an open source implementation, build it from source, use that. I don't know if you want to take the same path with
APL. This brings up a question. This brings up a question. I know you like to operate in that environment where you can build everything from source before you get going.
Yes.
But the audience, assuming we're going to have an audience at some point, who wants to try these things, are they going to be really willing to go back and do that when other options are available? So I think we might want to make it clear, yes, if you want to bring in something that's an implementation that's already pre-compiled and you can just run it from the command line, here's how you can do that, or you can build the whole thing from scratch like this.
That's a good point. In the case
because I wouldn't choose to build from source if I didn't have to, depending on what I was writing. Like if I was writing something that I really wanted to base it on a specific implementation and I wanted to be able to control what I was doing. And I know you're doing that yourself with the, what is it called? That language you're writing, AB something or other.
Oh, we'll talk about that later.
Well, anyway, so you're building a language. If you want to do that, then you're going to want to build everything yourself. But I find most of the time that for me personally, I'm perfectly happy to go out and find something that is already implemented. And then I can just start working on the problem.
Well, so you're absolutely right. I'm an outlier. I'm being the weirdo, and the 99.9% of programmers are going to use a package manager to install the tool they need or the compiler or the interpreter that they need. So you're right. I think that's probably the right approach because the goal, I don't want to impose my prejudice of everything needs to be built from source here. But that does beg the next question is, what platforms do we support? Obviously we have the whole Linux, Mac, Windows triumvirate, I guess we could call, if we're not talking about things like Android, iOS, Raspberry Pi, and other Internet of Things, and those embedded devices. Let's stick to desktop for now, I think. I would suggest we just standardize on a POSIX-like environment
okay.
for now, I think we'll need to figure out the Windows divide, Windows native versus everything else. But if we stick to a POSIX-like environment, you've got that on Mac, you've got that on Linux, and you've got that on the Windows subsystem for Linux, whether one or
you've
two.
You've also got Cygwin and MSys. Those provide you that style of library too. That style of environment.
That's true. Do you have a preference on the Windows side of which environment?
I've used MSys for years. But I'm going to go ahead and try with the WSL.
I think WSL is better because in terms of installing, for example, if you're going to install PHP, not build it from source, then you're going to use the package management. It's an Ubuntu distribution that runs in there, so it'll be it'll be apt-get to do an install of PHP. In Mac, it'll be brew or Mac ports. I use Mac ports myself, so I'll just do an installation using, because I'm going to run yours as well. I'm going to install PHP and run it from there. So rather than building PHP from source, I'll use Mac ports. And then under Linux, depending on your distro, it's going to be whatever package manager. So I think you're right. I think that's the way to go. How does that sound to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea. You know, the other thing that we might look at for this is we should talk about the scripting languages, like Bash, C Shell, Corn Shell, and I don't know if there's much point in doing it in the Windows Bash language, which used to be called the old MS-DOS scripting language.
No, .bat.
But yeah, I would be very curious to see something in PowerShell, though, to just kind of demonstrate the agony of working with PowerShell compared to some other simpler scripting languages. Like, for instance, what you've just written here in C would be probably about the same size, if not less, in Bash, but in PowerShell it'd be bigger.
Well, you make a very good point. In going forward, my thoughts are for Proglang Base not to discriminate between what a scripting language from a non-scripting language. Ostensibly, they're all programming languages. Now,
that's true.
We're gonna have a column in Proglang Base of paradigms, and now I think the wrong way is to try to put any language into a single paradigm. I see it more as be like a histogram. You can imagine that it's going to be like, it's this much of a procedural language, it's this much of a functional language, it's this much of an OO language, it's this much of a scriptable language, right? Meaning you could use it to write command line scripts and so forth, or you couldn't. So when people look at the actual categories of languages, we'll have, through our own analysis and our own kind of conclusions, we'll be able to come up with this. So I would actually throw Bash, maybe even the Windows Batch language, certainly PowerShell, as amongst any of these languages, right? I mean, it's ostensibly...
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
It could be. In fact, I think I was almost going to throw PowerShell at you, like maybe next week, and I'd say, okay, do this in PowerShell, and you would do something mean to me, like do it in Shell, right? In fact, there was a video the other day of somebody who wrote an entire compiler or interpreter in POSIX Shell just to show that it could be done, right? Because Turing complete language, therefore, no matter how obscure and weird and bizarre it is, it's still doable. The only reason I put a shell script in here, because I would prefer each example to be as much as possible only in that language of the example, but because C has no scriptability,
right,
as part of it.
You need a launcher.
Right. So for example, if you were to do this in Rust, you would only need Rust because you would just say cargo run the program and you're done. So you wouldn't need...
Yes, you can't build that completely from source, like you said, because Rust is written in Rust.
Well, that's a different issue. And we're not even talking about that now, right? So when we do the Rust example, which I'm probably going to throw at you at some point, just to make your life.
I was thinking you probably
because I can write this in Rust pretty easily, but I think it'd be better to challenge each other in languages we don't know. Again, the example I say is like if you wanted to write this in Rust, you would just have to do Rust up, or install it as a package. But Rust up is the easiest way. You download Rust up. It's complete. Right. It's scriptable in the standpoint of because it has its own package manager and cargo and its ability to execute within that. You don't need to run a shell script. You can literally, it'll be multiple files because that's the way Rust is. When you generate a new project, you're going to get a cargo toml and you're going to get source files and that sort of thing generated. This one's even simpler, right? It's a single C file. And I only added the shell script so that there could be a single command that you enter, run, to make it execute. Because as you can see, if you had to think about, how do I compile and launch this thing, you would have to know these obscure GCC parameters and args. So it made sense to wrap that in a shell. So I would say in cases of PHP or other languages where there's not enough built in to the language, the language implementation itself, and it's package management that comes along for the ride, that we try to keep it simple with simple POSIX shell script. Or like you were to say,
I'm happy with that. I think that when we're talking about the Windows environment, though, depending on who we're talking to, we're talking about, because when we talk about the history of working with the POSIX environment or just the Linux environment, then really coming from command line, the command line orientation is where that comes up. Whereas the Windows environment goes the other way. Everything is pretty much IDEs, very little from the command line until you actually need the command line in Windows, because that's what it's always been. It was Windows. That was the name of it because you did everything in these windows. So it will be interesting to attack it from that point of view, thinking about the audience that we're going to have from the Windows side.
Well, I think there's a decision in your case. Well, I don't know why I'm saying your case. Like, I use Windows as well. I have to. I use Mac, I use Windows, I use Linux, I use all these things.
We all have to, whether we like it or not.
Well, some people can stay away from it because I do work in Unreal Engine. That's on the Windows side. There is a Linux implementation, but really it all happens in Windows. But we're talking about Windows. There are two environments. There's what we're calling Windows Native, and then there's, well, more than two, but let's just say without having to add Ming or Cygwin, you do have the Windows subsystem for Linux. That you can just, it's Ubuntu. You can just pretend it's Linux. You can just do POSIX shell, and you can install using apt-get, whatever package manager you want to use. And you don't even know you're in Windows. I mean, from the standpoint of this program you're going to write, it's going to act like a POSIX program. It's going to act like a Linux program. But you're right. If you decide to do an implementation that's native Windows, then you shouldn't rely on there being a shell interpreter. So you would use a Windows batch file, .bat, or PowerShell, PS1,
right?
And either one is considered native. For example, if F-sharp comes up, which it will, as an implementation, that makes sense to do straight from native, right? Because .NET is there, F-sharp is there, it's already there, and it will probably be a PowerShell script as the launcher or runner as part of that.
Yeah.
Or not.
Although F-sharp, I think, doesn't F-sharp, I believe... No, that's right. F sharp is a DLL.
Well, no, so, you can run F sharp programs as scripts by saying .NET. Yeah. I forget the parameter, but you can actually say .NET directly and give it an F sharp program and it runs as a script. So this is an example where F sharp can be a scripting language.
Well, just like VBScript, the Windows scripting host. Yeah. That's basic in Windows Native too.
But I think VBScript would be entirely GUI based, right? Whereas F sharp can be a completely command line script.
No, VBScript is command line.
It is.
I mean, you run it through the Windows scripting engine.
But you could have your IO entirely through standard in and out on the command line. It doesn't require a window. It wouldn't like open a window and expect to have a console or something like that in the window. It can be completely a console app.
Okay, let me say that. All right. Now that I think about it, I'm not certain that's. I can't say for F sharp, but for
F sharp, I know F sharp can do that. I've done that with F sharp. I can open a PowerShell. I think I could I think I could even open Terminal. Just the old style.
Not command line.
Not Terminal, but cmd.exe, right?
Versus, the command PowerShell.
And I think I can run F sharp from there with just console IO. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. We're kind of getting off of it. Your goal is PHP, simple as possible. You're thinking Windows subsystem for Linux?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're essentially writing.
It's going to be one of those. I mean, it's going to be
Ubuntu.
Either that.
You're writing an Ubuntu version, which is fine.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do APL on Mac, but I'll also try to make sure that it runs under WSL as well. I think that's actually a good call. Because if it runs on Mac and WSL and Linux, then it kind of covers all three. And I think that would be fine.
Most of it,
and assume package installation. Okay.
Okay.
We have a plan.
We have a plan.
Anything else we want to wrap up? We'll talk more about for those listening and watching. ProGlang Base. Once the website's up, we'll dive into the details and the philosophy and the principles and all that. For now, we're just going to hack on. Goodbye. Hello, world.
See you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.